What is up? Welcome to another edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. Glad you could be here. I am Marcus Grant, joined by Dwayne McFarland. We have said farewell to Ian Harditz and the Sheesh Report. Not enough sheeshing, I guess, with just two teams left, or two games last week, Dwayne. I mean, they were both great, but Ian does a great job. I think it's hard for even him to find a lot of sheeshing in what happened over the weekend.
Yeah, for sure. We would always welcome some sheesh, but totally understand when you get down to two games, it's like, okay, we had like two sheeshes in the game. Right. But, you guys know, if you're not already following Ian Harditz, and why would you not be? The whole world is following Ian Harditz, so I doubt that you're not. But obviously, he keeps track of that, and you can find it all on his Twitter feed, or you can go to fantasylife.com where you can read all of Ian's goodness as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So go check that out. Go follow him on X, Twitter X, whatever it is. In the meantime, I'm here. Dwayne's here. We're going to talk some utilization, which, of course, you can also find that over at fantasylife.com. But before we dive into the two remaining teams, the Chiefs and the 49ers, who will play in Super Bowl 58 in a couple of weeks in Las Vegas, want to talk some coaching, because for the other teams in the league, they have already pivoted toward the 2024-25 season, and that means a lot of them are hiring new coaches. And so obviously we can't go through all of the hires, maybe some of the most recent ones, starting here in Los Angeles, where I am, where Jim Harbaugh has now come to land with the Los Angeles Chargers, fresh off a national championship with the University of Michigan. And Dwayne, obviously, this is not the first time we've seen Jim Harbaugh as a head coach in the NFL, had success with the 49ers, got to and lost a Super Bowl against his brother and the Ravens. But after what we've seen the last couple of years with Brandon Staley, it feels like there's a little bit more renewed excitement about what could be for Justin Herbert and the Chargers offense.
Yeah, I think that Jim Harbaugh is a good coach. He definitely has a philosophy, though. He has always historically ran the ball. And I thought, well, he's had some bad quarterbacks, or he's had some running quarterbacks like Colin Kaepernick. That can often help tilt things more towards that run heavy approach when you have someone that you can involve in the design run game as a, from a quarterback position, or they're turning dropbacks into scrambles. And that's going to make things look like you're actually running it more than you are from a intended play calling perspective. But as I dug into this, Marcus, I don't know. Like, it's a little bit scary for Justin Herbert, because even whenever you look at Harbaugh, he had this guy named Andrew Luck in 2010 at Stanford. He dropped back to pass 41% of plays. 41%. That's at 59% of the time this team ran the football with a quarterback named Andrew Luck. The year before that with Luck, 63% of the plays were runs. 37% of the plays were passes. Now, it's interesting, because in that second season with Luck, you could also say, well, they just dominated everybody. Yeah, their average margin of victory was 22.9 points. So that can lean things towards running as well. You're leading all the time. You're just running the ball. But then I was like, okay, well, let's look at the NFL. And he had Alex Smith in that first year with the 49ers. You're the big 49ers fan. You could probably recap this better than me. But even then, like, Alex Smith was not like a major running quarterback. He could scramble, he can do some things, but not a huge part of your ground game. 48% pass, 52% running plays. So I looked at his entire head coaching career. He only has two seasons, Marcus, in which he actually passed the ball more than he ran the ball. And one was with the 49ers, and that was in the 2014 season, but they were 8-8. They had a -2 average margin of victory. So they were trailing in those games. And even then, it was 51% pass to 49% run. And then we had the shortened 2020 COVID season in Michigan. So I don't even know if we can count this. His quarterback was Joe Milton. They went 2-4. Again, trailing all the time. Average margin of victory was actually, we should probably call it average margin of losing, -6.1 points per game. Dropped back to pass 55% of the time, ran 45%. But for all of his career, 43% pass, 57% run. That's not quite fair, because teams run the ball more in college than they do in the NFL, and it's more effective. But at the NFL level, 48% passing and 52% rushing for his career. So while I think this is going to be a positive move for the Chargers, I do wonder what it means for Justin Herbert. We've got two wide receivers in Mike Evans and Keenan Allen that are due a lot of money. The Chargers have major cap problems. They've also got an aging running back. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they do with the moves around those players, as well as who do they hire as offensive coordinator? Like if it goes to Greg Roman or something like that, oh my God. Like I think this could actually be bad news for Justin Herbert. What are your thoughts?
No, that was exactly my thought, is that I was waiting to see who the OC was going to be, because Harbaugh and Roman do have a long history together. And a lot of those 49ers teams you talked about, Greg Roman was running the offense there when they had Alex Smith, when they went to the Super Bowl with Colin Kaepernick. Even you look at Roman's time in Baltimore, having Lamar Jackson with a very run-heavy, ground-based offense. Now, it worked in those situations, but as you kind of gotten to, Justin Herbert is not Colin Kaepernick or Lamar Jackson in terms of how he plays stylistically. So that's going to be a big key. And I think you hit on the other big part is, who are the personnel going to be, right? Will Keenan Allen be back? Will Mike Williams be back? Will Austin Eckler be back? And that is going to go a long way toward determining what this is. So I do think overall this is a good move for the Chargers. Harbaugh has shown that he can win football games, but I think you're right that offensively I'm sort of waiting to see who else is coming to Los Angeles before we can really make a judgment on what Justin Herbert can be this year. So
if I'm projecting this out of the gate, and I haven't done my first pass at projections yet, I don't know that I could make this team more than like 55% pass. Which is, you know, and if I'm doing total like dropbacks, like maybe around 60%, if I'm not just looking at passing attempts, just looking at Harbaugh's history, like it really surprised me with the luck stuff. Even when he's had a really good quarterback, he has decided they can throw the football down the field. I know Harbaugh wasn't necessarily like the greatest quarterback like back in his day, and his best experiences, I think, came on teams that could run the football. And if you look at really, you know, what he did at Michigan, like it was all running the football. Now, he never had a great quarterback. Like he had Shea Patterson, he had J.J. McCarthy. But I mean, even these last 2 years with McCarthy, man, 62% and 61% of his plays were running plays. So I think it's going to be something where I'll probably start out a little bit more conservative if I had to do it today. But then to your point, it's like these other moves will ultimately dictate how do we treat this. But I think we're going to have a little bit of I think we have to be a little bit conservative when we look at Justin Herbert's dropbacks, especially considering the fact that he just played with Kellen Moore this last year, who's one of the most pass friendly coaches in the league.
Which actually is a perfect way to segue to Kellen Moore, because he leaves Los Angeles and he's headed to Philadelphia to take over as the offensive coordinator of the Eagles. I'll say this. This is the one thing that kind of surprises me a little bit, because, I mean, you know this. 2 years ago when Moore was still with the Cowboys, he was the hot name to be a head coach somewhere. And in the interim, he's just taken a couple of OC jobs. So I don't know if the excitement has sort of worn off with Kellen Moore. I'm not sure. But I think after what we saw at the end of last season with this Eagles offense really trying to find some sort of consistency, you mentioned Kellen Moore being very pass happy. He's a guy who, at least in Los Angeles and even in Dallas, was very reliant on the tight end. There seems to be, I think, a very significant change in philosophy coming for the Eagles offense this year.
Yeah, I think so. On the surface, like, I really like it. I'm not the hugest Kellen Moore fan, like from a standpoint of like managing the game, how he calls the game. But I think he does a ton of things that really help his quarterback. It's also the fact that, you know, he's a very pass heavy coach. So that could be a good thing for Jalen Hurts, because he is surrounded with multiple good weapons. I know that the Eagles want to run the ball and they've got the ability to do so, but maybe they could benefit from passing the ball just a little bit more, especially given like the strides that we've seen from Hurts as a passer. I know it got a little bit gross at the end of the year, but Hurts was battling an injury. You had AJ Brown then battling an injury. Devonta Smith missed time at the end of the year. Dallas Goedert missed some games in there as well. So how often did they really have all three of those guys, or all four of those guys, I should say, together, healthy, truly clicking? And they really depended on like that RPO offense last season. But I think that you'll see more traditional passing looks with a lot of cool wrinkles that Kellen Moore will bring to the table. So if you look over at fantasylife.com and you can go to the team styles, you guys can check out the summary view for what the Chargers did this last year. And they had a 4% dropback rate over expectation. That was fifth best in the NFL. And if you're not familiar with dropback rate over expected, it's just saying, okay, in the game scenario where here's your down and distance, this is how far you're behind, this is what the average NFL, this is what the team, what NFL teams have done on average over the last three seasons of data. And then what did the Chargers do in those same scenarios last year? So it's just really taking account the whole game script kind of idea. Here's the situation you're in. Did you throw or run the ball more or less right than your competition? And the Chargers were one of the most pass happy teams, which we kind of covered. But schematically, what I really like about Kellen Moore is the fact that he uses a lot of shift and motion plays. That's an easy way, Marcus. We've seen it. Like, for example, with the 49ers, with the Miami Dolphins, those are just easy buttons, right? And it tells you, do you have man or zone coverage right away? The quarterback gets a pre-read. Then also you're giving your offensive weapons a head start, right? And that's the new twist this last year, is these guys being basically full sprint, you know, coming out off the line of scrimmage. And also, you know, maybe it should be a penalty, aiming upward, up the field, not just horizontal, you know, pushing all those things. But when you look at the Chargers, right, and their use of shift and motion this last season, second in the league, only to the 49ers. So I really like that. Also, he used RPO a lot, which has really been important to their offense for the Eagles. It's something Jalen Hurts is very comfortable with. And you saw Kellen Moore use that on 25% of plays this last season. So I think that's another positive. That's something they can keep integrated. And then the other thing he does is he uses a lot of these trick look plays. And essentially, it's just enough to make the defense wonder, like, what is this at the snap of the ball? It's one more thing that they have to decipher, and that's an advantage to the quarterback. So I just think there's a lot of things here. I mean, play action is another one. You know, when you look at the Chargers, they weren't like the top of the list, but 17% was actually this last season, 17% ranked 8th in the NFL. So he's in the top in all those areas, and you don't see many coaches that do a good job of using all of those different things in their game plan. So I think from that standpoint, Kellen Moore is going to help Jalen Hurts a lot. And maybe those wrinkles like that, when you've already got Dallas Goedert, you've got AJ Brown, you've got Devonta Smith, I do think that could be really huge. And if you look at early drafts right now, people are kind of ignoring Jalen Hurts. I don't want to say they're ignoring him, but this is a guy that was going in the middle to the end of the second round last season, Marcus. Now he's falling into the middle of the third, sometimes the end of the third rounds. I know it sounds crazy that we already have drafts for money going on, but that's the day we live in. And there's a lot of data points, and Jalen Hurts has fallen down draft boards compared to where he was last year. I don't know that that's necessarily smart. I think that Jalen Hurts is still going to score a ton of rushing touchdowns. And with Kellen Moore as his offensive coordinator, I can't tell you that this is going to be great for the Eagles as a team. But I do think this is going to be really good for fantasy, Marcus.
I'm curious what happens with Jason Kelce, right? I mean, he's sort of been pinpointed as that engine that sort of, especially when it comes to the brotherly shove, that sort of makes that thing go. And we're still waiting to see what his decision about his career is going to be. But all the other skill position pieces are in place. I mean, you mentioned Goddard and Brown and Smith. You know, I presume DeAndre Swift is going to be back, you know, and have a focal point role again this year. So it's now just a matter of kind of getting this offense going again, where it really kind of stumbled down the stretch and became a little bit predictable last year. If Kellen Moore can sort of switch that up and make them a little bit more unpredictable, a little bit more varied, I think they go back to being, again, the juggernaut we saw, I think, in the first half of the season, which, you know, I think should scare a lot of folks across the NFC, across the NFL. But we'll see what happens with Moore and the offense come the summer. In Los Angeles, Zach Robinson had been Sean McVay's quarterback and passing game coordinator. Now he heads to Atlanta to become the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons. And look, obviously the Rams passing game looked great, especially down the stretch. They got to the playoffs with it. But how much of this matters until they figure out a quarterback there in Atlanta?
Well, I think, you know, the big takeaway here is it's just not Arthur Smith anymore, you know? So I think you're going to get much more stable usage, right, of Drake London, Kyle Pitts. I don't think Kyle Pitts is going to be leaving the field all the time. I think Bijan Robinson will be used more as a bell cow back. We've seen the Rams very willing to do that. Kyren Williams, Todd Gurley back in the day. And when we look at this coaching tree, you know, for McVay, it's been pretty successful. We have Matt LaFleur. I think he's done a great job with the Packers. Brandon Staley, a defensive guy, so I'm not going to really include that here. But looking at Zach Taylor, what he's done with the Bengals. And honestly, I don't know that Zach Taylor's super sharp. I think he's got Joe Burrow and a lot of really great weapons. We can't say that Zach Taylor's not, because I haven't seen him forced to do something without a guy like Joe Burrow and those weapons. But then, like, if you look at Kevin O'Connell, I think he's also done a nice job with the Vikings, even though at the end, like, I know if you're just a Vikings fan, maybe you're not completely satisfied with what you've gotten from O'Connell, but it was a tough year. You lose Kirk Cousins this year. I think he's a good coordinator. All these guys have shown a willingness, you know, to be balanced on offense, keep defenses on their heels. So I think it's going to be an upgrade in play calling from what we got. And I think we'll get stronger utilization, but you're right, Marcus. The ultimate thing is who is going to be their quarterback, because that person is not on their roster right now. So are they going to try to make a trade up in the draft? Are they going to try to make a move for someone like a Kirk Cousins? Do they perhaps want to go trade for Justin Fields if they can't make that trade up to get one of the other three quarterbacks that maybe they want in the draft? Like, Jaden Daniels is really flying up draft boards at this point, right? We could have three quarterbacks go in the top 6, 7, 8 picks. You know, so I think it's really interesting as to what happens here, but I think there's a chance here. Atlanta's sitting at pick 8. So it's not like they can't make a move with another team that doesn't need a quarterback like the Cardinals. You know, you just kind of got to hope with the Cardinals, like, does Marvin Harrison Jr. fall to them? Because if he does, I don't see how they pass him. But if he doesn't, and he's already gone maybe to New England, and New England doesn't take a quarterback, well, then I could see Atlanta, you know, they're like, hey, we're at 8, you're at 4, let's make a deal. And at that point, maybe they can make that move up, and there's something they want to do at quarterback. So I agree with you. Got to make a change at quarterback. But hey, at least we're not dealing with the craziness that was Arthur Smith over the last three seasons.
That was kind of step one to us kind of buying back into the Falcons. So that part has already been achieved. We'll figure out who their signal caller is going to be, and then, you know, then hopefully step three prosper for all of us at that point. In Buffalo, Joe Brady gets the elevation to being full-time offensive coordinator after being the interim. That was after the Bills moved on from Ken Dorsey midway through the season. So we sort of saw what happened. Now, I know that people went out and kind of dug up a lot of the EPA numbers, and there was some things to show that maybe the Bills stagnated or maybe even got worse in some regards in terms of their offensive efficiency. But, you know, I don't know how you feel about Joe Brady. I mean, I thought they were good enough. They obviously made a run in the playoffs before they ran into their old nemesis of Kansas City. But how are you feeling about Joe Brady now as the full-time guy there in Buffalo?
I'm honestly concerned about it. You know, you brought up the EPA stuff. I don't know that the offense was necessarily better. I think the results were better, right? There were games that they should have been winning early in the year that just weren't going their way. Buffalo was actually playing pretty good football, even with Ken Dorsey calling the plays. And I worry that they'll get the wrong takeaway from this, which is, oh, we're just going to run the ball more. You have Josh Allen. Yes, you need to run the ball. You need to be balanced. You got to call a good game to keep the defense on its heels, always wondering what's coming. The elements of surprise is still the number one thing on offense, right, that you can use. Anytime the defense isn't for sure about what you're doing and they have to guess, run or pass, you're in a good situation as an offense. But I do wonder, like, looking at this minus 7% drop back rate over expectations since week 15 with Joe Brady calling the plays through the playoffs, I don't think that's the right takeaway when you have a quarterback like Josh Allen, who has made such major strides and he's become so a much more accurate quarterback. He can attack all areas of the field. It's not like you're dealing with a limited passer that you just really need to use his legs more to help win games, right? I do think you want to let Josh Allen run and do his thing. So I think there are positives with Joe Brady, but I think the real thing here for the Bills is they've got to figure out, like, what are they doing besides Stephon Diggs? Right. Dalton Kincaid was a nice step in the right direction. James Cook flashed for about a 4-game sample, but then he just kind of fell out of the picture as a receiver. So is that really great, Joe Brady? I mean, Stephon Diggs was a dud. You couldn't figure out what to do with him. And you only got really max gains out of, you know, James Cook in the passing game for 4 games, and then it went away. So, like, how good of a schemer are you really if you can't find a way to get one of these guys to be your feature guy down the stretch? It is concerning to me. So I'm hoping that this was really just a bridge and he was like, look, this is what we got to do to win this year. But next year, being open to what's going to be the best path for the Bills. And I think we do have to acknowledge weather and where the Bills play. And maybe this is something that they need to do more at the end of seasons. I just hope it's not the way we shoot out of the gate in 2024 with Josh Allen and the weapons.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see what they do from a personnel standpoint, because you mentioned Stephon Diggs. And in the past, I think this Bills offense has been accused of relying too heavily on Stephon Diggs. This year, I think the complaint was, where was he? He wasn't the same explosive playmaker we were used to seeing. They've got to sort of find that happy medium. They've also got to find somebody who can be a real complement to him. We know who Gabe Davis is. It's
Stephon Diggs, Marcus. Yeah. Right now in early drafts, pick 26. So you're getting him in round 3.
All right.
I'll take round 3, Stephon Diggs.
I'll take round 3. I'll absolutely take round
3. I know there's some risk here with Joe Brady. But again, like with Diggs, real quick, I know he had a bad game. His last game was a bad game. He dropped a huge ball that could have changed the whole game. So I get it. But overall, like the guy was still getting open. He was still getting targets. It's just that the pie shrunk because they were running the ball so much. So we won't have a real way of determining what in the hell Joe Brady's going to do next year. We won't know for sure. Like he could come out week one and just surprise us with everything. But assuming that he's somewhat, you know, in between where we finish this year and what we've seen before with the Bills, I think that Stephon Diggs could be a real value in round 3.
Yeah, no, I think he absolutely can. You know, I still believe he has plenty left, and it's just a matter of sort of unlocking.
Remember,
that
again, riding these old receivers off. Oh, you wanted to ride off Keenan Allen? Yeah, he got hurt at the end of the year. But how'd that go for you through the season? Keenan Allen was crushing. Oh, wanted to write Mike Evans off? How'd that go for you? Not so good. So I look at it, I keep it pretty simple. This guy still had all the underlying data points we wanted, or most of the main ones for Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. And he has Josh Allen at quarterback. I think we just shouldn't overcomplicate it from there.
No, 100%. So Joe Brady, though, does have a big task ahead of him to get this Bills offense back humming again the way it was early last season. Let's dive into some utilization from over the weekend. Of course, as I mentioned, two teams left, the Chiefs and the 49ers, representing their respective conferences in the Super Bowl in Las Vegas, Kansas City. It was a good first half. The second half, the offense sort of stagnated, although I think you can probably credit the Ravens defense really figuring something out and locking them down after they scored 17 points. Patrick Mahomes, though, again, finds a way to get it done. It's not always pretty, but it is very much effective. Considering the cast around him, if they win the Super Bowl, would this be his best season yet in terms of just accomplishments?
Yeah, and I want your thoughts on this one, too, but I think so. I think it's comparable to last year. I know last year they were a much more explosive offense, but when we look at the supporting cast, like, let's be honest, Rashee Rice is probably an upgrade. He is an upgrade from Juju Smith-Schuster, right? And you had Travis Kelce. Now, last year, Marquez Valdes-Scantling came through more than he did this year. Last year, you got a little bit out of Kadarius Toney in the playoffs, so he hasn't been getting those things. So I lean to saying yes, just because of the way the Chiefs have played all year. Versus what we expected from them last year going into the Super Bowl. But I thought it was interesting, you know, what you said. I do think the Ravens did some nice things in the second half against the Chiefs. But I also think the Chiefs, like looking at the data, they just kind of shut it down in the second half. You know, if you look at Mahomes, he ended up with 241 yards and a touchdown in that game. But he had 161 of that and the touchdown in the first half. And the Chiefs chose to come out firing at the strength of the Ravens defense. And that is really their ability to cover. Like, they are the number one yards per attempt against defense in the NFL. Well, they were coming into that game. And Mahomes was the only quarterback on the weekend, Marcus, to not post a negative completion rate over expectation. He was plus 8%. So every other quarterback was in the minus column in the playoffs, you know, as the competition gets tougher. But if you look at the Chiefs, they dropped back 65% of their plays in the first half and just threw it at Baltimore. In the second half, though, you got a 10-point lead. Lamar Jackson had only completed 42% of his passes, one of them to himself, you know, on an amazing play. The Chiefs, they only dropped back to pass 53% of the plays in the second half. So they really just kind of shut it down. Now, Mahomes was a little bit less effective, to your point, on their passing plays. I think Harbaugh made it a point. So let's take away the screenplays. Let's get rid of some of these easy reads. And so part of it, I think, was the Chiefs also probably adapting and saying, okay, they're giving us better run fronts, things like that. So truth probably somewhere in the middle. But I do wonder, like, if Mahomes had really needed to keep throwing the ball and they needed to keep dialing up like their best plays to win the game. I kind of wonder. I think Mahomes had a shot to get 300 passing yards in this game against a very good passing defense. The truth, we'll never know. Maybe it was 275 and two touchdowns. But the bottom line is that was a great first half. And the Ravens, you could tell, they didn't expect it. They really thought the Chiefs, and I did too, I thought they were going to come out and run the ball because the Ravens, if you've been able to keep a game close, if you can get to 14 attempts against them, 6 of 9 running backs have gone for over 100 yards, right? And so we knew Pacheco had been a big part of the game plan. So it did surprise me the way that they came out and attacked them that way. And it's just, dude, he's amazing. Patrick Mahomes, and just sitting there watching him in the pregame, it's more than just his ability as a passer. He really is a good leader, and he gets these guys all on the same page and just playing with everything that they have. He's truly an amazing, amazing player.
Yeah, he really is. And I mean, I think to your point about this year's Chiefs team, I know at some point late in the season, they led the NFL in drops. That had been one of the big storylines about this offense all year long, that the pass catchers really hadn't lived up to expectations. Even Travis Kelce statistically was down from where we were used to seeing him. And what I thought was interesting about Sunday's game is that the Chiefs, especially in the first half, sort of did to Lamar Jackson what a lot of teams have tried to do to Mahomes, which is we're going to possess the football and we're just going to take what you give us. And we're going to, you know, we're just going to run clock and we're going to keep you standing on the sideline. I mean, Lamar didn't get many chances to have the ball in the first half. And when they did, they didn't seem to have it very long because the Kansas City defense really kept them from moving the football. It's just a different style, right? And I think that was what we saw out of the Patriots for so many years, where they played so many different styles. You had those years, you know, where Tom Brady throws 50 touchdown passes and Randy Moss is an absolute beast. You had those years where they just sort of had to grind it out. And I think we're in the grind it out era of Mahomes' career, where teams are playing too high safeties. They're trying to take away the deep shots. He's got wide receivers that he's still sort of breaking in and directing on the field, even at this point in the season. And he's figuring out a way to win against the best teams in the league. So, for whatever weird reason you didn't believe Patrick Mahomes is one of the greatest we've ever seen at this, this year should convince you of that 100%. You mentioned, though, the running game, because I was with you. I thought that for the Chiefs to win, Isaiah Pacheco was going to have to do a lot of the heavy lifting. He ran pretty well. He had a decent game, but more importantly, he was just always on the field, Dwayne.
Yeah, and I mean, since the playoffs have started, Pacheco just, he's not sharing. And maybe Clyde Edwards-Helaire just not really able to get much going as part of that as well. Like, Pacheco's playing well, but Clyde Edwards-Helaire is not playing well. And so I think you just put those two things together and you get into the playoffs. And just like we see in a lot of sports, it's like, okay, we're shortening down the rotation. You know, we're not going to play our backups as much. We just want our best guys on the field. We're not trying to save something and manage them for the next game. Now, this is the game. Like, you know, we got to win this game, get to the next one. And now, obviously, we're heading to the Super Bowl. It's the final game of the season. But yeah, Pacheco, it's been impressive, Marcus. I mean, 75% snap share in the playoffs over these last three games. And he's got 76% of the rushing attempts. And most importantly, from a utilization perspective, he's got 100% of the carries inside the 5-yard line. And the Chiefs have shown more of a willingness to run it inside the 5-yard line here recently. Because like what you just talked about, I thought that was a great like parallel with the Tom Brady thing. Like, they're just showing that they can be a chameleon. They can adapt to whatever the environment is, whatever the matchup is, and just do what they need to do to win that game. So I think it's really interesting here with Mahomes and with Pacheco and what they've done. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire, you know, he gets a few of the snaps and the long down and distance work, but still most of the passing down work's also going to Pacheco. That 2-minute offense, they didn't use it in the divisional round against the Bills. But if you look at it in the wild card round, 83% of the 2-minute offense went to Pacheco, and then 57% of the 2-minute offense went to Pacheco in the championship game against the Ravens. So when you add it all up, I mean, you got a guy that's getting 17.3 fantasy points per game. And based on, you know, the last 12 seasons of data, Pacheco's comp group is 18.6 fantasy points per game and a running back 5 finish. Right now, Pacheco is going in round 3 of early drafts. I kind of feel like I had highway robbery the other day in our in our fantasy life way too early mock draft. I got Pacheco in round 7. I will say, like, if you're drafting today, and obviously many of you aren't because you're not like complete degenerates like me and Marcus, but if you're just kind of thinking ahead, it's a little risky because he's a 7th round pick. The Chiefs could do something to add a back and free agent. We have a big free agency class, and I think some of these running backs aren't going to get the paydays they expect, and they're probably just going to be sitting out there, and eventually they're just going to be like, well, I just want to go somewhere where I can win. Well, where's a place like that? The Chiefs. Like, what if you end up with Derrick Henry there next year, right? I mean, there's Josh Jacobs we've got going into free agency, Saquon Barkley. We're dealing with that again. If these guys don't get paid, and I think one of them won't, Marcus, there's a chance that they land, you know, with the Chiefs. So I'm not on board with Pacheco as a round three pick right now. But if he gets through all of that and none of those guys get signed, they don't spend draft capital at the position. Well, then I could see, okay, well, like, how do you really argue against Pacheco? It's a good offense. And yeah, he's around seven to pick, but he's been really efficient. He's one of the top 10 backs in yards per carry, yards after contact. He's really strong. Doesn't hit a ton of explosive plays, but he's still above the league average. So it's very admirable what Isaiah Pacheco's been able to do as a round seven draft pick. And a good job by the Chiefs finding him.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying that Isaiah Pacheco has in some ways turned into what we hoped Clyde Edwards-Helaire could have been when they spent the first round pick on him. I just remember how excited we all were in fantasy. Yeah. Like, yeah, the Chiefs.
Andy Reid running back. Reid running back one. You immediately think Brian Westbrook.
Right. We're thinking Brian Westbrook. We're thinking all these guys. And that hasn't quite panned out, which gets to the next point where I love the way it's written. C-E-H-M-E-A. I mean, it's C-E-H, meh, but the way it just looks, it's visually, trust us, it's visually pleasing when you see it here. But the point is, Clyde Edwards-Helaire really just still can't find any traction all these years later in that Kansas City backfield.
Yeah, in the playoffs, getting 3.3 rushing attempts and 1.3 targets per game. And so just mostly covering this, guys, because we're just down to the final two teams. We know you guys are probably focusing on like DFS. You're looking at some of the showdown slates and those things over on DraftKings. And that's going to be a lot of fun. You're also probably looking at prop bets. So Edwards-Helaire, though, it's tough. Most of his work is really coming in long down and distance situations, which is it's just really, I don't know what to call it, low rent snaps. Like these are not very fruitful snaps for running backs. Think about it. You're in third down and eight, third down and nine. You've got man coverage across the board for the most part, and you have a blitzer. So what's his number one responsibility? To block, to make sure that Patrick Mahomes doesn't get killed. Then what's his second responsibility? Okay, I might float out into the flat, but it's in man coverage. There's going to be a guy coming in, closing in on him, and guess what else? He's not going to get the first down. He's got 7 to 8 more yards to go, and Mahomes is much more likely just to buy time, find the guy downfield, or honestly, scramble. Just take off. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire, it's hard to get very excited, not getting very many of the carries inside the five, even if I'm looking at like DFS contests where you're just hoping, hey, I need to get lucky on like a player that differentiates my lineup. I mean, it could be Edwards-Helaire. I think the best way that happens is if for some reason, and we would never want this, but Pacheco goes down in the first quarter. I do think Edwards-Helaire is clearly the next guy up. They just don't have anything else. Like, you got Jerick McKinnon, who's on IR, LaMichael Perine, they don't really want to be given the ball to. And that might be the only other guy that they would have active in that scenario. So if something happened to Pacheco, Clyde Edwards-Helaire would certainly get a lot of work in that case. And, you know, a lot of volume in the Chiefs, even though it probably wouldn't be as good as what you get from Pacheco, it could still be fruitful, you know, from that lens. But it's hard to figure out a path where CEH is going to do much for you, even in like a showdown matchup.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point we've seen the movie, we know who he is. And he more than anything is just, he's the guy who's there to give Pacheco a break when he needs to catch his breath a little bit. And that's sort of it. Over to the pass catchers for Kansas City. I mentioned earlier that this was not statistically the sort of season we're used to seeing out of Travis Kelce, but it's sort of, Dwayne, like they just sort of waited. They knew they were going to get to the playoffs and they decided that, you know, for Mahomes and Kelce, we would just save our best for when it really counted, because in the postseason, he's looked like the Travis Kelce that we've become accustomed to seeing.
Yeah, over this three-game stretch, he's got a 30% target share. He leads the Chiefs. Okay, so yeah, Kelce's just absolutely doing what he's done, you know, in the past. He's getting 9 targets per game and 67 air yards over that stretch. He's got 22.7 fantasy points per game. So that's second and out of all players besides outside of quarterbacks. That's second best in the playoffs behind only Christian McCaffrey. Now, Christian McCaffrey's on his own pedestal, sitting up there at like 30 and a half fantasy points per game. But the next closest guy is a tight end. So Travis Kelce's really out here, Marcus, scoring more like a wide receiver one, which is what we had gotten used to. I mean, he's playing like a wide receiver one, not a tight end one in fantasy football. And I do think this is pretty interesting because I think his playoff performance is also just kind of like looking ahead to next year. Like it's going to be enough that people are going to be like, okay, because I really do think there was a chance that Kelce was going to fall to third, fourth round, something like that. But I think this is going to be the thing that's probably going to eventually push Kelce back up into that round two. And early drafts right now, he's going pick 46. But I think once people really have time to digest the offseason and what Kelce has done in the playoffs, I think they're going to decide, okay, great. yes, he's going to be 35 years old, but look what he did in the playoffs. He really looked great. And honestly, I find it hard to take someone over him. As much as I love Sam LaPorta, we were on Sam LaPorta this preseason. Never could have imagined it would have worked out this great right. for Sam LaPorta. But right now, Sam LaPorta is going ahead of drafts, ahead of Kelce in drafts. Is that something you would do, Marcus? Or are you still on Team Kelce right now?
I think I'm still on Team Kelce. I wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't shout somebody down for doing it. But I think I'm still on Team Kelce because the sample size, the body of work is larger right now than what we've seen from Sam LaPorta. That's it.
Yeah. And I think just with Kelce, like he's one of the only tight ends we've really seen in the history of the position. There have been a few that can consistently perform like a wide receiver one. Can we put that right now on a guy like Sam LaPorta? And I think if to be the top tight end off the board, that's kind of what you're looking for. That's the standard that Travis Kelce, you know, has set. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But I mean, look, he also just broke Jerry Rice's record. So, I mean, it's kind of fitting that we're talking about him as a wide receiver one, the best wide receiver one of all time, in my opinion. Yes, I love Randy Moss as well, but I still think it's Jerry Rice. And to see that Kelce has passed him for the most receptions in playoff games, I mean, that's just quite an accomplishment.
It's insane. Absolutely. And it definitely speaks to what the Chiefs and Kelce and Mahomes have all accomplished together over these last 5 or 6 years. Absolutely incredible. Speaking of guys named Rice, Rashee Rice, who has been the most consistent wide receiver target on this team. And you know, we talked about Kelce stepping it up in the playoffs. Rashee Rice seeing a bigger target share in the playoffs as well. I mean, this is, I wouldn't say it's a narrowly funneled passing game, but it's sort of getting that direction.
No, I think you can. I think you're right. I think it is a narrowly funneled passing, you know, tree. And I think it should be. Rashee Rice, you know, he's sitting there at a 25% target share. He's second on the team in the playoffs, playing really well, 16.3 fantasy points per game in the playoffs. So I think looking at this, you know, not to get too far ahead, we'll talk more with matchups and stuff next week. But look at the way that the Lions attack the 49ers. They're actually built very similarly to the way the Chiefs are. Sam LaPorta, who we just talked about, a good tight end, and they've got a great slot or Z wide receiver in Amon-Ra St. Brown, which is really the role Rashee Rice is playing. And Detroit moved the ball at will against San Francisco. I know they ended up losing at the end of the game. 49ers did make a couple of key stops. But if I'm the 49ers, I'm not happy about this matchup where you're really better on the outside at taking away big plays from the outside wide receivers. The Chiefs could care less about using their outside wide receivers. I mean, it's Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Justin Watson. So they're not really looking to get the ball to those guys. They're going to be trying to get the ball to these two players at positions that caused an absolute nightmare last week for the 49ers. I could not believe, Marcus, all of the third down and longs that the 49ers gave up to the Lions, namely to these sort of players, plus the running backs, right? Getting the running backs involved. Jahmyr Gibbs obviously had that one run for like third and 13 or whatever it was. That was ridiculous. So if I look at the centerpieces to the Chiefs offense, it's Kelce, it's Rashee Rice, and it's Pacheco. So that's the same thing you have with the Lions last week. So I'm looking for big things out of this receiving core against the 49ers with the Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how this goes. I mean, the Niners like to take away the middle of the field, but as you mentioned, on the edges, they were pounded by Detroit over the weekend. So we'll see how this works out. Speaking of, I mean, MVS, not necessarily the biggest playmaker, although look, he's made plays when they needed him to, right? He had two big catches against the Bills. He had the one that basically sealed it against Baltimore this past week. So he's not maybe heavily involved, Dwayne, but it seems like he shows up when they need him to.
Yeah, and I think they rewarded him for making the two plays in the divisional round against Buffalo. He had a 56% route participation that week, and 96% was his highest mark of the season in the championship game. So if you're going to be out there all the time and you play with this guy named Patrick Mahomes and the 49ers, while they're going to play a lot of zone, they're going to play a lot of deep stuff. When they occasionally give you that man look, if MVS just happens to get over the top, Mahomes is willing to throw it. And we saw that. At the end of that game, I don't think the Ravens could believe to close that game out. It was a pass deep down the field over the top to MVS falling down on his back, made the catch. It was a clutch play for him. So I think with that play, it's probably cementing the fact that he's now actually in an every down role for the Chiefs. Again, only a 6% target share last week. The 49ers are really good on the outside at limiting wide receivers. They're a little bit more susceptible against tight ends, against running backs out of the backfield, but it's been tough for outside wide receivers to get anything going. But the whole thesis on a guy like Marquez Valdes-Scantling is just, hey, if he gets two chances in the game and one of them is 50 yards for a touchdown, you win, right? Correct. You win the fact that you stuck MVS, you know, into your DFS lineup. Or if you put down a prop bet, it's probably going to be like 18 receiving yards. I haven't looked at it. You know, 17, 18 receiving yards. One catch can do it for you with MVS. So he's one of those kind of prop bet plays. So I do like him. I expect the full-time role to continue. Can't say that it'll be 96%, Marcus, but I do think by making the plays, he is the one guy that we can say will at least be on the field for the most part outside of the big three, Kelce, Rice, and Pacheco.
And then you got the next guys up in Noah Gray, Justin Watson. I mean, these are guys that you really are just hoping for one big chunk play because volume is definitely not going to be on their side for this.
For sure. With Watson, he's the third guy in line. He had a 57% route participation, 6% target share. He's not doing a lot. That's pretty gross, actually. Has not been a high-end target earner, but similar thesis to MVS, just not on the field as often. So his chances to find single man coverage on the play where Mahomes can also buy enough time, right? Escape the rush, keep away from Joey Bosa, and then see you and throw it to you. He's just going to have less chances, right, than MVS. MVS being out there more is going to be the guy that you would prefer to use. But Noah Gray, man, if you look at him and MVS, they're tied for the most targets per game in the playoffs outside of the big three at 2.7. Route participation is not great, 41% over the playoffs, so he's behind some of the other wide receivers, including Justin Watson on the team, but he's got an 18% targets per route run. And again, when I look at the 49ers, a lot of their confusion this last week came against the interior players for the Lions. So I do like Noah Gray as a guy that if you're playing, you know, a showdown slate over on DraftKings, Noah Gray is a name that's going to be cheaper, and I do think you can mix him in. They like to use more 12 and 13 personnel here recently, do the Chiefs. And if you get inside that 5-yard line, they will often go to these plays. And there's a chance that Noah Gray is a guy that you get on play action that scores the touchdown if the 49ers decide to allocate all of their resources to Travis Kelce on that kind of play. And why wouldn't you if you're the 49ers right. want to dedicate everything to Travis Kelce?
If Travis Kelce beats me, if I let him beat me, then I'm going to spend all offseason wondering how I let that happen. If somehow Noah Gray and or Justin Watson beat me, you just tip your cap and you say the Chiefs kind of figured it out. You know, hey, man, good on you. That's how you beat me. Before we turn our attention to the 49ers, this piece of news just came across my Twitter feed as we were recording here this morning. The Steelers are expected to hire former Falcons head coach Arthur Smith as their offensive coordinator. This according to Tom Pelissero. So, I mean, look, I know you haven't had a chance to sit down and really dive into this, but just your immediate thoughts on Arthur Smith to Pittsburgh.
It's not good. It's really not good for anyone. I mean, they're going to rotate more. So Deontay Johnson, this is a big hit to him. They're going to run the ball more and they're going to rotate players more. That's what's going to happen. I don't like it. I mean, here's the good news. Kenny Pickett hasn't really shown anything. So is this that huge of a blow to us? I don't, George Pickens is the receiver that's going the highest right now in drafts. And, right. You know, he definitely flashed us last year. This is not good for him because Arthur Smith is going to find a way to get Calvin Austin on the field more. He's going to give you more Miles Boykin. It's stupid, man. It really is. But that's what he's going to try to do. Now, he's not the head coach anymore. So Mike Tomlin could intervene and be like, bro, we're going to need to calm down with this. We're still going to play our best players. You just dial up the plays. I'll worry about who we want to keep on the field. That's what you're hoping for. I will say, like, maybe this works for Najee because, I mean, mm-hmm. he's shown a willingness to stick with these inefficient backs like Tyler Allgeier. You would hope that immediately he'd be like, oh, well, backups play more. Maybe that's more Jalen Warren. But I don't trust Arthur Smith to do anything that we would consider to be reasonable from a coaching aspect. I will say this. I don't think Arthur Smith is a terrible schemer. I think Arthur Smith just makes weird decisions about which players to have on the field at certain times. That's where he's really bothered me. But he knows how to use play action. He knows how to use bootlegs. He'll use the motion and the shifts, all the things we talk about. I think Arthur Smith actually from just designing and drawing up plays and creating mismatches against defenses Like he can draw them up. What he doesn't understand is like, okay, your best player still needs to be on the field to create the mismatch. It looks really pretty on the paper, but we need the best players out there. So that's my immediate reaction. Hopefully Mike Tomlin can intervene for us and say, no, we're going to play our best players. You just worry about you know, getting your pencil out and drawing up the right plays.
Well, I already see the Twitter jokes are flying. I made one about Calvin Austin getting more targets. You know, I've seen our boss and friend and colleague Matthew Berry start the hashtag free Jalen Warren. So it's already beginning with the news just breaking about Arthur Smith taking over as the offensive coordinator of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Hey, Super Bowl 58 is just around the corner, and we've teamed up with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official partner of the NFL, who is gearing up for the big game with a huge offer. Right now, all new customers will get $200 in bonus bets instantly when they place their first $5 wager on anything. Get in on the action by downloading the DraftKings app, and don't forget to use our promo code DEBRIEF. That's right. New customers who bet just $5 will get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Now, wondering what you can use your $200 in bonus bets on? Combine multiple bets together from the same game for a shot at an even bigger payout. Now, if sports betting is not yet available in your state, don't worry. You can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy and have the chance to win cash prizes. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers use our promo code DEBRIEF and bet just $5 on any wager and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's promo code DEBRIEF. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. All right, turning our attention now to the 49ers, and we'll start with Brock Purdy, because Brock Purdy in the playoffs has sort of been whatever you believe him to be, right? For the people who are haters, who don't like Brock Purdy, they point to the errant throws, the dropped interceptions that he got away with, just all the kind of weird decisions he makes. For the people who are supporters of Brock Purdy, they look at the fact that when the Niners needed him most, he made the throws, or he made the runs, he made the plays to get them in position to win. I feel like the biggest complaint about Brock Purdy is that he's not elite, right? Like, people want to compare him to Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen. And I think, you know, right-thinking people are like, yeah, no, of course he's not that guy. But he is good enough. He, you know, he's not always the engine, but he definitely makes plays when they need him to. I don't know what your thoughts are on Brock Purdy at this point.
I think it's funny. I think Brock Purdy has absolutely exceeded all expectations. I think if you're still clinging to the fact that, oh, he's just another Jimmy G and he's totally from the 49ers offense, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. I think you're just flat out wrong. If you're clinging to, oh my God, Brock Purdy should have been the MVP of the league, I don't think that either. I don't think he's one of the best three quarterbacks in the league, but I think he's still a really good quarterback, especially for someone that you drafted in the seventh round, Marcus. So I think what Kyle Shanahan and they have done with Brock Purdy, yes, he has the best weapons in the league around him. You know, he's got four elite playmakers around him. But I do think Brock Purdy, the thing that I'm seeing, and we saw it earlier in the season, is his ability in the pocket just to buy a little bit of time, you know, scramble, get into the scramble drill, find someone down the field. Those are things you did not get from Jimmy G. If Jimmy G was dead in the pocket, Jimmy G was just dead. And Jimmy G was not good at dealing with a pocket that was collapsing. Brock Purdy, we're seeing him take these massive hits as he's hanging in there to get rid of the ball. I like him. I really think Brock Purdy's a good quarterback. Again, don't think he's an elite quarterback, but I think he's really good. So again, like most thing, I don't know that we can say the truth lies somewhere in the middle with this argument, because that would just put him like at dead average. And I think he's better than average, because it's the extreme that he sucks and then the extreme that he's great. But I think that he is definitely, I would say he's a top 12 quarterback in the NFL right now. Like, I haven't sat down and like dug into every single number, but I like him. I think he's playing well. And the other thing that we're seeing here, like if you're thinking about it from an angle of heading into the Super Bowl and what's changing with Brock Purdy, you know, we talked about his ability, you know, in the pocket, but also just his willingness now to just take off and run. And we see this more with quarterbacks in the playoffs. You know, everything, again, it's back to everything being on the line. I've just got to go get this first down. I've just got to make this play. We're not conserving anything anymore. And Purdy has shown a willingness. He had 52 rushing yards on three scrambles last weekend. All three of those extended drives by picking up first downs. Two of them were on second down and long. One of them was on a third down and four. but he's keeping the drives going, keeps moving the chains, picking up a first down. He averaged 1.1 scrambles per contest during the regular season, but that number is up to 2.5 per game in the playoffs. So that's something to keep in mind as you start looking at the early lines over on DraftKings as far as any prop bets you might want to consider.
Yeah, I did not have Brock Purdy beating the Lions with his legs on my bingo card, but as you mentioned, he made several big plays.
And he looks natural at that, honestly. He yeah. doesn't look forced. Like, he looks very natural when he decides to leave the pocket.
This is year two for him, right? I mean, you see the game slowing down and him starting to kind of process a little bit faster. He's a good quarterback. And having watched Jimmy Garoppolo the last few years, I can definitely say there are some plays and some throws that Brock Purdy has made that I'm not sure Garoppolo would have made if he were the 49ers quarterback. Plus, I still say the next pass rusher that Garoppolo eludes will be the first. Just does not have that sort of mobility back there in the pocket. Speaking of mobility, Christian McCaffrey continuing to make plays and find the end zone. And you talk about Isaiah Pacheco not sharing opportunities. Christian McCaffrey has been incredibly stingy with these snaps in San Francisco.
Yeah, I would not have wanted to have been Christian McCaffrey's brother growing up. Like, you would have never gotten anything. No toy would have ever been yours. But looking at McCaffrey, man, 95% of the snaps in these two playoff games would have been more. But he landed awkwardly on his head. Looked like he might have, tweaked something in his neck. And he came off for that last drive where Elijah Mitchell came on, got those carries, scored the touchdown. But 71% of the team's rushing attempts, and he's getting almost all the carries for running backs other than those for Mitchell. The only thing making that a 71% is Brock Purdy scrambling and getting a couple of design kneel downs. So that's the only thing keeping that number lower. And his 26% target share leads all 49ers in the playoffs. You're sitting here on a team with Ayuk, Debo Samuel, and George Kittle. And it is Christian McCaffrey leading the way with a 26% target share. The other thing that's really impressive for me here, Marcus, is it doesn't matter what the game script looks like. San Francisco trailed the Packers by 4+ points on 52% of their plays in the divisional round. Okay, 33% target share to McCaffrey, right? He finished the game with 28 opportunities, 16 carries, 12 targets. He gave you 31.8 fantasy points. Okay, great. Let's go over here and let's play the Lions. Oh, my God. How are the 49ers getting their doors blown off? Well, in this game, the 49ers just decided, even though trailing 68% of their snaps by 4+ points, they're like, we're just going to stick with the run. Their dropback rate over expectation was -9% in the game, and they just continued feeding McCaffrey. He had 20 rushing attempts, and he also came up with six. He had six. What did he have? Sorry, I missed it. Anyway, he had 5 targets. Sorry. 20 attempts and 5 targets. So he's averaging 26.5 opportunities per game. So I went back into the utilization logs and just went way back, Marcus. You know how far I had to go to find the last time we had a Super Bowl with a running back like Christian McCaffrey coming into it that had had this sort of utilization? It was 2000-2001 season. It was Jamal Lewis, who averaged 27 opportunities per game with 25.7 rushing attempts and 1.3 targets per game. So Christian McCaffrey, we're looking at a guy that has utilization in the range of the last time we saw it was in the 2000 season. So 23 years ago, that's how long it's been since we've had a running back coming into a Super Bowl with the type of workload that we see with McCaffrey. And maybe this is probably just another argument that we don't mean to just support running backs don't matter.
I feel like there's running backs and then there's Christian McCaffrey. Starting to separate himself from the rest of the group at this point, which with Christian McCaffrey getting all this work, there's not much left for Elijah Mitchell. I know he had the touchdown late that ended up being sealing it for the 49ers, but we're not seeing a lot of Elijah Mitchell at this point because when you have Christian McCaffrey, why would you take him off the field?
Yeah, this is similar to the CEH argument that we had earlier around Pacheco. The only reason you can play Mitchell is you're just like, okay, well, what if McCaffrey goes down? We clearly know that Elijah Mitchell is the number two at this point. Jordan Mason probably gets a little bit of work as well. But to your point, Elijah Mitchell did not have a touch in the game until they were inside once they reached the final 3 minutes. I think it was 3:06 left remaining on the game clock whenever we had the first touch to Elijah Mitchell. So McCaffrey had left the game due to that injury. So, Mitchell does not have a role unless CMC goes down.
Over to the pass catchers, Debo Samuel. This time last week, we were worried about what his health was going to be with the shoulder injury. He gets a clean bill of health, comes in and plays. And at least to watch him, you would not know that there was anything wrong. I mean, he did everything, made catches, ran the football. I mean, he looked like Debo Samuel. That was my biggest takeaway. He looked like Debo Samuel on Sunday.
Yeah, I had a lot of concern that he would just potentially be a decoy. You know, and it's hard to get a read on these things. Kyle Shanahan, to his credit, he was honest. He came out and said, Debo's going to play. He practiced in full on Friday and that there wouldn't be any limitations. He wasn't lying. Samuel led the 49ers in route participation, 97%. Target share, 33%. And he handled 10% of the team's rushing attempts in the biggest game of the season. So you look at this, it was a game where there was a lot of heavy, there was man coverage. And Greg Olson, I was like, man, shout out utilization. We were calling this out about the man coverage for the Lions and the zone for the 49ers. Greg Olson did a great job on that game. I think people have given him plenty of praise for really good reason. I know Tom Brady's waiting in the wings, but man, got to find a way to keep Greg Olson on in these big games because he does a great job of breaking things down. But hat tip to Debo, because Ayuk was the guy in the first half, Marcus. 40% target share to Ayuk in the first half against these man looks. Ayuk has been the man beater for the 49ers all year, but he and Purdy just weren't able to get on the same page. You know, he had that really nice out route early in the game, you know, where he tiptoes, gets his toes down, does Ayuk, you know, it's like an 11-yard completion. And just after that, they just weren't able to get it going. The coverage was right. They were getting the targets, but it just wasn't happening. And Debo really stepped up. And not only did he just do the work at the line of scrimmage, he did his normal stuff where it's like, hey, just quickly get Juszczyk a motion, put him out there as a blocker, throw the ball to Debo. Does his thing. He had plays like that, but he was also beating man coverage. Debo was out there getting these dig routes. He was getting these crossing routes against man, and Purdy was finding him. So in the second half, it was really Debo. They needed him to come up, and he had 6 catches for 68 yards in those final 2 frames of the game, and he was a huge part of how the 49ers were able to overcome that 24-7 deficit in the second half. So major hat tip to Debo going into this game against the Chiefs. Chiefs are the number 2 defense in yards per attempt allowed to opposing quarterbacks. They play really well against wide receivers, a little bit more susceptible on the inside. But looking at Debo, looking at Ayuk, obviously these are going to be the 2 lead guys. The 49ers have a great scheme. They're going to do their thing. I mentioned Ayuk. I'll just hit him real quick.
Yeah,
the targets were there. 33% target share. It just never could happen. It just wasn't ever working out. They were not able to get in sync, him and Purdy. You had the big play late in the game. You know, there was obviously huge where it's, you know, off the Lions defender's face mask. Ayuk ends up coming up with that for a 51-yard game, puts the 49ers inside the 5-yard line. They end up scoring a touchdown there. So still had his impact on the game. But overall, like you just expect in the future not to probably have Ayuk and Purdy that off. It just happens sometimes. Sometimes you have these games where it's like everything's lined up to be a huge one for Ayuk, and for whatever reason, the chemistry just wasn't right between those two. But I don't think that's something that carries over into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, and you mentioned it. I mean, obviously, people will remember the big plays. He had the touchdown catch, then obviously the big, ridiculous, you know, off the face mask diving catch, which I'm sure you heard the post game. He had a ladybug that landed on his shoe, and that's how he knew something special was going to happen during the game, which if I'm the 49ers, I'm trying to round up ladybugs and taking them to Las Vegas with me or something. I don't know. But yeah, you got to believe that it will be better in a couple of weeks when they get on the field against Kansas City. George Kittle, look, this was an all-around game for George Kittle because statistically, I mean, he didn't do a ton. He had some big catches and runs, but it was not necessarily a big game catching the football. He did a lot in terms of blocking and opening up holes and kind of leading the way even for Purdy on some of those scrambles. It just feels like, I mean, look, when you have all these weapons, right, McCaffrey and Ayuk and Debo and Kittle, there's always going to be a week that somebody is sort of the odd man out. It just felt like this was kind of maybe Kittle's week to kind of be the odd man out.
That's all that happened. I think Kittle's a top 2 tight end, you know, in the league right now. Like I love Sam Laporta, but straight up, Kittle's a better player. Kittle's a more explosive player. Kittle's a more complete player. Now he's 30 years old. He's getting older. So if you're starting a franchise and you have to take a tight end, you're taking Laporta. But Kittle's right there. It's just an overcrowded offense. And that's what happened, Marcus. You know, 78% of the targets in this game went to Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and Christian McCaffrey. So it was really about those 3. Earning targets has been a challenge for George Kittle this season when all of those guys are healthy and on the field. He has a 19% target share. But just to kind of give you like a frame of like 19% is actually really good when you're playing with three other players that are that strong. So the 19% is not a knock on Kittle. It's just the fact that they have all these other mouths to feed, which is, you know, the point that you brought up. So route participation remains strong, though, 92% in these two games in the playoffs. So Kittle's out there. He's still going to have his chance to score his big plays. And again, I think the matchups might be better on the inside. Nick Bolton really struggled last week for the Chiefs. He's an athletic linebacker that's done some really good things over these last two seasons. But the Ravens, on the plays they were making, it was tough for Nick Bolton. Now, to his credit, you know, getting stuck for a long time in that play against Zay Flowers, you know, that's not ideal for a linebacker having to cover a wide receiver. But we also saw the tight ends getting loose on Nick Bolton. I think Justice Hill got loose on Nick Bolton one time. So I think that this could be a situation where Kittle might have the best matchup of the tight ends and wide receivers this next weekend.
Yeah, so we will see. Of course, we have plenty of time to talk about that between now and then. One last one, Juwan Jennings. Niner fans have started taking to saying third and Juwan because sometimes he will show up and make some play. He had one catch on Sunday. It was one hell of a catch in a huge situation. He reaches up with one hand and just kind of snares one. He's another one that, you know, you talk about some of these other Chiefs secondary receivers, right? The Noah Grays, the Justin Watsons. Not a lot of opportunity for Juwan Jennings, but every now and then he'll pop and he'll make some plays for this offense.
Yeah, he's on that tier that you just mentioned. 44% route participation, 7% target share in this last game. Obviously, it was higher in the game before because you had Deebo Samuel leaving early in the contest. So Juwan is just one of these punt plays in DFS. You mentioned it. They like to use him on third down. They get him into the slot. If something does happen to Ayuk or Deebo and they have to miss any portion of the game, then Juwan Jennings is also the guy that was getting more run late in the season anytime one of those guys were nicked up. So that could be another way that you could run into some fantasy points if you're thinking about, you know, a really cheap play over in DFS.
Yeah, there it is. So all names to keep in mind, of course. We got a whole other week to talk about this, too. We have the off week between the championship games and the Super Bowl. So we will dive into it next week. What in terms of, like, for you, I mean, I know there's not as much utilization. Have we moved on to supermodel stuff? What's on your plate right now?
Oh, man, yeah. Starting to dig into all the data for the rookie prospects. Just also getting a look at early drafts and where players are going, just kind of getting my head around that. But the next big thing also, like, right out of the gate, we'll have free agency pretty quick, Marcus. So yeah. Starting to do my research on the free agents as well. So just the utilization report from a written standpoint this week, but I will have the rankings and projections up today. So those will be coming out, and then starting to do the work to be prepared to write about the free agency prospects, not prospects, but the free agents. And I'm getting ahead to prospects because, like, I get so excited about the draft. But getting all that back end data stuff together to be ready after the Super Bowl to hit the free agency stuff and then as well as the NFL draft.
Yeah, it's all happening. We were talking before the show. There's not really an off season. I'm sitting here looking at my Twitter timeline and I'm seeing reports from Mobile for the Senior Bowl and all these things. So it's all happening right now. We'll have plenty to talk about as the winter, spring, and summer go along. But that will do it for this edition of the Utilization Report Debrief. Of course, as I mentioned, you can go to fantasylife.com. You can check it out there. You can still play around with the tools. You get yourself ready for whatever DFS or whatever sweat you're kind of set up for yourself for Super Bowl Sunday. Of course, we'll be back next week to talk a little bit more about this. But in the meantime, for Dwayne McFarland, I am Marcus Grant. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Enjoy the week, everybody, and we'll talk to you again real soon.